Welcome to the program for Tuesday, September 11th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, of course, is the anniversary of the attacks on September 11th, 2001, and our thoughts and prayers are with the families of those people who were victims of that attack and who responded to the attacks. And we will be observing that that event later on in the program in hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose. Some comments at the Pentagon today by Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, by President Obama, and by General Martin Dempsey, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And you can see some of our September 11th resources on federalnewsradio.com. Thank you for listening today. It's a special edition of Agency of the Month brought to you by CenturyLink. And today we're focusing, as we are all month long, on the Department of Homeland Security, appropriately enough today. My colleague Jason Miller joining me in studio to join in the questioning, and our guests in studio from the Homeland Security Department, the Chief Human Capital Officer at DHS, Catherine Emerson. It's a pleasure to see you today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me here today.
Happy to do it. And we're also joined by the Deputy Commandant for Mission Support, Vice Admiral Manson Brown of the Coast Guard. Admiral Brown, thank you very much for being here today, too.
Pleasure to join you, Francis.
The conversation that we're going to have today, folks, will revolve around the issues that you're dealing with primarily with manpower at DHS. And Catherine, we'll start with you on that. Mr. Boris, Rafael Boris, was our guest last week on Agency of the Month, and he talked about some of the initiatives on a very broad sense that you're working through at DHS. Tell us about the things more specifically that you're working on in the area, especially of employee morale and recruitment and retention at DHS, given where you are 8 or so years after standing the agency up.
Well, let me start off by talking about recruitment. As you know, DHS is a very large agency. We have over 240,000 employees. So at any given time, we are recruiting many employees. What we've done recently is we've got our components together and we have been examining skill set needs, looking at mission critical occupation needs, looking for what we need, the skill set that we need today out of our employees to accomplish our missions, but also what we look for, what we're going to need in the future to get the job done.
When you talk about examining skill set needs, that sounds almost like a ground up inventory of all of the things that we do. Did you go that to that level of detail?
Yes, we have actually. We've gotten our components together, working together, sharing needs, sharing best practices, sharing what is occurring in the agencies, and looking at what skill set is needed out of each different occupation that we have. What occupation that we have now that are mission critical, occupations that we're going to need in the future. So, yes, we have examined all the occupations.
Now, your predecessor, Jeff Neal, has been on the show a couple of times recently. One of the things that we talked about is the idea that folks have this conception of these 20 however many component agencies being combined together, and they're these formerly autonomous organizations now trying to work together. But he said that in working through that, you found that there were a number of commonalities amongst the organizations that are working together. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, when the agency was first stood up, it's my understanding that the components were brought together and they were operating almost independently. Our current secretary has really made a push, an initiative known as One DHS, where she has all the components working together to accomplish the mission.
Admiral, your organization was one of those that came into DHS during that time of combination a couple of years back. Talk about fitting into an organization that's primarily composed of civilian-type agencies, and your organization has kind of a military-type feel to it, I imagine.
Well, that's correct. But at the end of the day, our mission really could be described as being the maritime shield of freedom for America. So we think that we're a good fit in the Department of Homeland Security.
As you look at the recruitment and retention piece inside the Coast Guard, talk about that in the environment in the same kind of context Catherine did.
Well, there are really two components for the Coast Guard because we are a military service. On the military side, we've got record retention because people just want to stay. I think a lot of that has to do with the pressures of this recession. On the civilian side, many of our more experienced civilians continue to stay well past their eligibility for retirement. So we're not seeing this tsunami effect of some of our more skilled workers leaving. Now, when the recession lifts, I think we're going to need to put strategies in place to bring in fresh talent without losing that corporate knowledge.
Now, that transition is something that agencies have seen found to be kind of challenging. How do you retain the knowledge that you have when the humans that hold it move from place to place, even maybe within your organization? What are you starting out with now? I imagine you're laying the groundwork for that now. You talked about when the recession lifts and forming strategies. But what are you trying to put in place now to get that going ahead of time?
Well, we want to anticipate. We want to take a look at the various disciplines that we employ as part of our workforce and anticipate what those needs are going to be so that when we outreach to the various sectors, we can target the people that we need to come in behind them. The other dynamic here that's in play is I think people are working longer, and I'm not sure that our strategy has reconciled just how long people want to stay for.
One of the things you mentioned, Vice Admiral Brown, was about the idea of the retirement tsunami. And we look at the retirement numbers all the time. I mean, that's a big day here at Federal News Radio to say, what are the retirement backlog like? Who's doing what? So I guess I'm going to shift over to Catherine. Are you guys seeing that same retirement tsunami? Because a lot of people at DHS come with this great mission, and then Francis brought up the morale issue. Sometimes they get frustrated. Sometimes they get better opportunities because DHS is still a very hot topic in the federal community.
Yeah, right now we have not seen that surge in retirements. We hover around 1.35% in the last 3 years. We've been relatively low, so we haven't seen that. But we do have a balanced workforce division on my staff in Ochico that looks at this and works with the components such as the Coast Guard to track retirements and what our needs going to be. So they're doing a lot of workforce planning. That's the same group that looks at the skill set needs for employees.
Is that also the same division that works on, for instance, the contractor workforce that's balanced with the federal employee workforce? I've talked to Richard Spires, the CIO, several times. And he said, listen, we were 7-1 in terms of contractor to feds. I was just wondering, is that the same thing, or are they looking something different?
No, that's the same group. They do look at that proper balance of contractors and federal employees, and do we have what we need to accomplish our mission, especially in times of emergency. But they're also looking at succession planning and workforce planning.
The managers that are on the front end, the front lines of hiring right now, what are the challenges that they're having? Are they having – obviously, there are a lot of people that want to work for the agency. Are they having problems finding people who are qualified to do the jobs that you have openings for? Are they having problems just sifting through the number of people? Or what are the challenges that they're up against right now?
Well, at DHS, we have a lot of people that apply to our department because they're interested in the mission. They have a passion for what they do. And in fact, I think that's one of the reasons that we do have such low attrition rates right now is because people see how they're valued in the workplace in terms of how they fulfill the mission. They have a true passion for the mission of DHS. So in terms of recruiting, we haven't seen a slowdown in that in terms of people who have interest in coming to work for the agency.
And isn't DHS in many ways one of the few agencies that maybe hasn't experienced that hiring freeze or early outs or buyouts? I think you've seen that in some of the military, like the Air Force has gone a couple, and some of the other civilian agencies.
So far, so good, but we know that we have budget challenges like the rest of the federal government on the horizon, so we will prepare for that as well.
You're listening to a special edition of Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My colleague Jason Miller sitting in with me on In Depth with Francis Rose. My guests are Catherine Emerson of the Homeland Security Department, Vice Admiral Manson Brown of the Coast Guard on In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll continue in just a moment.
Ready for a fight. This childhood obesity epidemic has gotten out of control in America, and it's time to take a stand. The gloves are off and the battle is on. Fired up? Good. Now let's go fly some kites, or take a stroll in the woods, or play some tag on the front lawn. Anything that gets kids moving. It's not going to be easy. Each one of us is going to have to do things like ride bicycles, play hopscotch, or toss around the frisbee. This is a war, and our best weapons are monkey bars, basketballs, and swimming pools. Any opportunity we have to get kids off the couch is one that can prevent things like heart disease and diabetes. So let's get out there by joining the cause with some wiffle ball, some monkey in the middle, or some water balloon battles. Because childhood obesity isn't going away without a fight. The most fun and rewarding fight in our country's history. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by CenturyLink Government.
Let's see, growing digital needs go here. So many different applications over here. So where does IT budget stretch to the limit go?
Fortunately, CenturyLink Government has an answer with its vast portfolio of cloud services so customers get the right mix of performance and features. CenturyLink. Solutions that work. Service you can count on.
For a free risk assessment, visit CenturyLink.com/federal.
The Workforce Mobility Initiative is transforming the federal workplace. But what's the most efficient and cost-effective way to implement it? Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. VCE VBlock systems are optimized for applications such as desktop virtualization and cloud services, so you can ensure that employees and customers get what they need whenever and wherever.
Work better and smarter with VCE VBlock systems. To learn more, visit vce.com/federal. That's vce.com/federal.
What about this? What about this? What about this?
Force 3 presents the world's most obsessive engineers. Today, it's John Kim.
Right now, I'm obsessing over how corporate networks can securely support BYOD, bring your own device. I'm thinking about it night and day. One minute, I'll be thinking about, like, my sandwich. And suddenly, I'm obsessing about how Force 3 can help iPad and smartphone users be on your network and take full advantage of voice, video, and all your business applications in a secure and reliable way. Force 3 teams with Cisco, VMware, EMC, and Apple to help you scale and deliver the performance and security you need to support BYOD. If you want to learn more, or if you just like one of our cool BYOD t-shirts, go to obsessiveengineers.com. I'm John Kim, and I obsess so you won't have to.
You can watch us obsess at obsessiveengineers.com. Force 3, let's do something great. Force 3 is a VMware premier partner and is certified with a VMware-ready teleworking solution.
Are lawmakers bullying federal employees? I'm Emily Kopp on Wednesday's Federal Drive. If you don't cough up documents for them, Congress may be sending armed federal marshals your way. And we'll find out the latest contracting developments from the Office of Federal Procurement Policy's Joe Jordan. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, a special edition of Agency of the Month focusing on the Department of Homeland Security today. Catherine Emerson and the Chief Human Capital Officer at DHS and Vice Admiral Manson Brown of the Coast Guard are my guests in studio. My colleague Jason Miller here joining me in the questioning. And Catherine, we talked a little bit during the commercial break about the idea of employee engagement. I want to ask you about that in just a moment. But one of the things we talked about in the first segment was the challenges and the opportunities that your agency has in recruitment right now with the amount of people that want to work for your agency and so forth. Where are you seeing the most growth? Jason mentioned the number that Richard Spires quoted about a tremendous amount of people coming in to do cybersecurity for the agencies. Is that growth area one, or are there other agencies or areas that are big too?
That is a very important growth area, cybersecurity. We have several strategies for improving cyber recruitment. The National Protection and Programs Directorate has primary responsibility for cybersecurity, but also our other components such as Secret Service and the Coast Guard have cyber responsibilities as well. So, yes, we are currently recruiting for cybersecurity experts.
What other areas are you seeing a fair amount of people coming in? Are there any particular ones that jump out at you?
Well, with 240,000 employees, there's always opportunity, so I don't want to discourage anyone
sure.
from applying at DHS. But we have a lot of opportunities for just about everyone at different levels, especially for student interns. We're a great place to come and start careers. We also have a very good outreach for veterans, and we are doing well on veteran recruitment, folks with disabilities, executives who've been doing their jobs for a long time. DHS has a lot of opportunities for all different levels of employees.
Admiral Brown, what about the Coast Guard? What are some areas that where you're bringing a lot of people on right now, either civilian or uniformed?
Yeah, I would say in this budget environment, I wouldn't want to categorize this as a growth opportunity. From my perspective, it's about choices. As we take a look at the national security threat environment, we just choose to invest more heavily in things like intelligence and cybersecurity. And so that creates the perception of growth opportunities for potential prospects out there.
Is it fair to say that the Coast Guard is experiencing the same kind of reshaping and reprioritizing of missions that DOD is, since your organizations operate in similar ways?
Well, I think what's fair to say is that we operate in a very dynamic threat environment. Obviously, we have a major role for securing 95,000 miles of coastline for the nation. Our enemy has a very dynamic threat perspective, and so we need to be adaptive to that. If you take a look at some of the strategies with the drug war, back in the day, it used to very much be an air war. Then it converted to surface. Now we're seeing subsurface threats that we need to adapt our methodologies towards.
When you analyze those kinds of dynamic threats, the biggest challenge I would think is trying to stay one step ahead mentally of the bad guys. When I think of some of the challenges that you're up against, I think I would be totally beyond me to have anticipated something like that.
The good news is we've got some really smart guys and gals in our workforce who can anticipate very well. I think particularly this young generation that's grown up in the gaming, with the gaming interests. We use a DOD technique called red selling. We'll lock them in a room and say, tell us what the bad guy's going to bring to us next week. And that keeps us ahead of the game.
It's really amazing, too, some of the anticipatory skills that these folks have, the ability to do that very thing. What are you finding when it comes to developing a cadre of people that are able to do that? What's the most effective way to do it, or where is the place that you go kind of farming for those kind of people?
Well, I think it's all about the environment you create. You need to create an environment where people feel empowered and included, so that when they have the opportunity to share a good idea or speak up, they're going to do it. So it really comes back to leadership in that regard.
One of the things what you're really talking about when you talk about leadership is engagement, employee engagement. And one of the things I think we would definitely want to address is the San Elizabeth Complex, something that the Coast Guard is very busy getting ready to move into, something that DHS is kind of put on hold a little bit for other people. Catherine will tell us a little bit what's going on there. But let's start with Vice Admiral Brown. Give us a sense of what's happening with that move to St. E's.
Well, I'm new to Coast Guard headquarters as the Deputy Commandant for Mission Support. I'm also the commanding officer for headquarters. Because the Coast Guard is the first component to move to St. E's, as the commanding officer, my responsibility is to make sure that move is successful. So we've established essentially a campaign plan that focuses on the needs of our employees, the structure of the move, the need to outreach with the community in Ward 8. The biggest problem we face is many of our employees have been at the Coast Guard headquarters complex for years. We're in Southwest, adjacent to Fort McNair. We're going to change their commuting habits. We're going to change their child care needs. We're going to change everything that they've become comfortable with. So change management is a big component of this, and that's where employee engagement comes in.
One of the things, as you went through that, very similar to what the Defense Information Systems Agency and DOD had to go through BRAC, are you starting to kind of reach out to them and say, how did you handle engagement? Because it seems like the agencies where it worked well, and people, I'm sure, are listening if they're in their cars now going, BRAC didn't work well. But I think there's some instances where it did. The employee engagement seemed to be key. Communication, and then communication again.
We've actually followed the lead of the department. They have already mapped out all of the federal agencies that have recently moved, some to Ward 8. And so we're really taking on the best practices of those moves. A lot of it has to do with communicating with the workforce and getting them engaged. We've created stakeholder groups. We've got a volunteer transportation committee that's giving our workforce choices for how they get to work.
Catherine, the element of all of these moves, whether it's a DOD move or a civilian agency move, it seems to be exactly what Admiral Brown is talking about, and that is making sure that the people who are going to be affected at least have an opportunity to have a voice. Then if they choose to not be involved with what's going on, that was their choice, that's fine. But at least then they will be able to say, and you will be able to say, we did this move giving everybody an opportunity to be involved. Is that what you're shooting for with the Saney's move?
That's what we're shooting for with the Saney's move and with the employee engagement actually throughout the department. You know, we want to hear from our employees. We want to listen. We want to hear their concerns. We want to work with our union partners on difficult issues. But that is really at the heart of, for example, what's going on at Coast Guard.
What's been the hardest part of that so far, anything to do with the Saney's operation, and how have you worked through it, or how are you working through whatever that challenge is?
Well, I think as the Admiral explained, it involves a lot of change. So anytime you're going to have change and a lot of transition, you're going to have plans in place. There's going to be budgetary concerns. There's going to be a lot of people concerns, but as the Admiral pointed out, the most important thing that we can do is work with our employees because they are at the heart of our workforce, and that's who gets our job done.
What is the status of the St. E's move anyways? Let me start with Admiral Brown since you guys are first, and then Catherine can give us the broader perspective.
Well, in terms of the structure of the building, it's going to be ready for occupancy next summer. So we've laid down track lines to start the move in earnest on or about 1 August of 2013. We're essentially moving 300 people every week. And so it's going to take us about 4 months to move our 3,700 employees over there.
The overall move to St. E's for DHS, Catherine, what's the timeline look like at this point?
Well, I'm not really sure of the time frame at this point. Like I said, there are a lot of budgetary concerns, sure, a lot of construction concerns, a lot of moving of people. So First things first, we're going with the Coast Guard, and I'm sure they're going to do a spectacular job and make it a success.
Now, the other component of this move is we're going to a new place, a new neighborhood, and we want to be a good neighbor. So community outreach is a critical part of this. And because we are a military service and we do this all over America, we're really focused initially on two segments of the population. We plan to put uniformed personnel over there in church visits so that the elderly in the community that are church going know us. And then we're also going to visit the schools so that the kids in the neighborhood know who we are and what we're all about.
What have you found? What kind of reception have you found when you've started to work on that community outreach?
Actually, it's been heartwarming. I had a chance to meet with City Council Member Marion Barry 2 weeks ago and brief him on our plans, and he embraced the opportunity to allow community members in Ward 8 to get to know us.
And that sounds like the same kind of goal that you have with the stakeholders inside the agency.
Exactly.
It's just, hey, here's transparency, I guess, is the best word to put on it.
It's exactly transparency. Think about the community in Ward 8. We're a law enforcement agency. They think 3,700 law enforcement personnel are dropping in on their neighborhood. The Coast Guard's much more textured than that. We've already got initiatives going with some of the schools over there for partnership in education. I met with the principal of Kramer Elementary School about a month ago. They're welcoming us with open arms.
Do we have time for more?
Yes, one more.
Don't want to jump to break and miss the important stuff. One of the things about the engagement with the community is also obviously engagement of, as you mentioned, people are a lot of change and people hate change. You talked about the Transportation Committee figuring out how we're going to get to work. Are there other committees that are either stood up yet or about to stand up that can kind of continue with that communication with the employees?
Well, transportation was sort of the long pole in the tent. It was the thing that our employees were most concerned about, and there are a couple of dynamics there. We've got a lot of available commercial parking in our current facility. That's not going to be the case when we move. So people have to really focus on other options to commute. And so we wanted to attack that first. But we've got, as part of our campaign plan, a series of conversations that we want to have with our workforce. The next one is on security. What concerns do they have? And what are we doing to address those concerns? A real key with this is We want to have the conversation early so that people don't kick the can and then we have a crisis and anxiety right before we move.
Well, or right after you move when you're already there. And I imagine, I mean, I've heard of other agencies who have not run into those problems until they're already settled. And there's certainly no going back at that point.
The good news about this is our nation has invested a lot of money to build 1.2 million square feet to support the Coast Guard. When we take people over on tours of the facility, they go, wow, this is going to be nice. And so we're getting a lot of good engagement from that.
My guests on the special edition of Agency of the Month focused on DHS are Vice Admiral Manson Brown of the Coast Guard and Catherine Emerson, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security. Executive Editor Jason Miller joining me on the program today, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Making dollars and cents out of data center consolidation. A panel discussion with experts from government, sponsored by Brocade. Panelist Zach Baldwin, Cloud Computing Program Manager at GSA.
In the initiative over the 2 years, I think the biggest barrier is to really do data center consolidation, you have to successfully deliver enterprise services from a centralized location. Culturally, people don't like to give up control. They want to see the blinking lights. They think they can do it better and cheaper. Which they're not capturing the fully loaded cost of some of these rogue data centers.
Right.
But also it's been institutionalized by the way the budget's done.
Meet the future head on. Brocade's networking solutions provide government agencies with the high performance, reliability, and flexibility they need to securely deliver mission-critical services while maximizing taxpayer dollars. To hear the panel making dollars and cents out of data center consolidation in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, search data center.
Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
A trusted 8A certified firm, Unistar Sparco Computers, is an IT solution provider that offers over a million IT products and office supplies. Their experienced sales team efficiently services both CONUS and OCONUS locations. Sparco.com's past performance ranks them with the top 5% of all GSA Schedule 70 contract holders. They hold various BPAs and IDIQs as a result of personalized customer care and fast, reliable delivery. Strong partnerships with leading manufacturers enable them to provide the latest technologies with budget-sensitive pricing. They are an IBM-certified premier business partner for servers and storage solutions, and their offerings include IBM software product lines such as licensing and renewals. Because they understand your needs, they have extended their business hours to support you, their government customers. For more information, please call 1-800-840-8400 or visit sparco.com. SPARCO.com.
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's neither one, but a hero just the same. It's a federal worker giving to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities. She pulls someone out of harm's way with every payroll contribution. He champions the people in his community with every CFC charity he designates. When you choose CFC code 31408 and give through payroll contributions, you're changing the life of someone in need. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
A bit better walking. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Research indicates more Americans are walking, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention also indicates we have miles to go. The review of national survey data found about 62% of adults walked at least once for 10 minutes or more in the previous week in 2010. That's up from about 56% in 2005. But people need to do at least 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity aerobic physical activity to get health benefits. Researcher Diana Carroll.
In our study, we found less than half of adults get the 150 minutes of aerobic activity each week. And this can be improved by doing activity as simple as brisk walking.
The study is in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthSpeed is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
What is required to secure America's technological frontier? Join National Journal and Government Executive as they kick off Cybersecurity Month on September 28th with a one-day event at the museum. The Cyber Summit features an unparalleled program exploring the latest developments in protecting our national security, critical networks, and digital information. Engage with top leaders in policy and implementation at this high-impact event. For details, visit cyber-summit.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today's special edition of Agency of the Month features the Department of Homeland Security. My colleague Jason Miller joining me in the questioning with Catherine Emerson, DHS's Chief Human Capital Officer, and Vice Admiral Manson Brown, the Deputy Commandant for Mission Support at the Coast Guard. Admiral Brown, we were talking about St. Ives and the move there and some of the interaction that you're having with some of the stakeholders. Catherine mentioned earlier conversations in a broader scale at DHS with the unions. What kind of engagement are you involved in with the unions when it comes to the move there? I imagine they want to be as up-to-date as possible.
Yeah, collaboration with unions is a key to success. So we have been working collaboratively through every step of the planning and execution for the St. Ives move, and I'm pleased to report that the conversation is going very well.
What does that conversation primarily revolve around? Same kind of issues that you talked about, or do they have other concerns or inquiries?
It's really the broad range of issues surrounding the move. Office layouts, accommodation for particular levels in the stratum of employees, parking, work hours, the whole range of issues that our employees legitimately would want to raise.
Pretty broad gamut of employee life, quality of life type issues.
Yes.
Catherine, what when you talk about interaction with the unions, not just on St. Ives, but more broadly, what you see the same kinds of questions, concerns, so on that Admiral Brown's talking about?
Well, yes, working conditions are always a concern and interest to our union partners, and we want to certainly engage with them in those areas. But I just wanted to touch base on one of the things that we're going to do at our next DHS Labor Forum the end of this month, and that is we are going to give a full briefing on the move to St. Ives to all our union partners so that everyone's on the same page throughout DHS about the move to St. Ives and they understand when it's going to occur and what's involved and have a sharing of ideas.
When those idea exchanges happen, what is the dialogue like? I'm sure that it's cordial. I'm sure that the information exchange goes both directions. But give me a flavor of how those things go, if you can.
Well, we meet quarterly. We have a DHS Labor Forum, which is consists of our labor partners and is led by our deputy secretary and also our management reps. And we have a sharing of information on anything from budgets to teleworks. Like I said, this time we will focus on the move to St. Ives. We leave it open to the parties to craft the agenda. What do they want to discuss? And then that's at a very high level. And then the parties take the information back to the components and work with it in that area.
One of the things about the move to St. Ives, I think I just want to touch upon real quick, is while DHS is still kind of waiting on some budget challenges, they did talk about kind of doing some more consolidation. Has that moved out further beyond St. Ives? Like there's a lot of different offices of DHS, and there's been some discussion about maybe we need to consolidate some leases or bring people together. Is there anything around that maybe you could update us with?
Actually, if I have a minute, I'd like to talk about the consolidation of human resources information technology, which at DHS we're doing some wonderful things. DHS is making a shift from that component-centric services to DHS in the terms of IT. One priority, for example, has been to reduce the number of learning management systems in the department. For example, currently we have over 9 learning management systems, and it makes it very difficult when we have to do data calls, but also our employees throughout the department aren't getting the same type of learning management opportunities, so it results in the have and have nots. So one of the things that we're looking at is consolidating learning management systems where we identify the needs of our employees throughout the department and come up with a more efficient and effective learning management system for the entire department. There's been a great interest throughout the department in consolidating HRIT, and it's really been a great showcase of management integration and collaboration. I've worked very closely with the CIO and also with HR representatives and CIO representatives IT representatives from throughout the department. So it's really a good news story. A lot of work, a lot of collaboration, but in the end, it's resulting in very efficient and effective IT for the entire department. So hopefully, in the next few years, as we move forward, we'll see a lot of consolidation in that area.
Now, when you talk about consolidation at an agency like DHS, I talked about this a little bit with Mr. Boris last week, but one of the challenges I imagine that you're up against, even though this isn't the intention and not the way that it's portrayed, is you go into a component and you say, we're going to do it, what we're doing and what you're now doing, a little differently. The unintended message is the way you're doing it isn't the right way, and so we're going to do it the way that somebody else is doing it. How do you try to mitigate that as much as you possibly can?
Well, the best way that we do it is we have a steering committee that comes together and we really hear it out. We hear everyone's concerns. We break down into work groups. What are their true needs? The good thing about IT is that it's always changing. So what they may need today may not be what they're going to need 1, 2, 3 years from now, and there's a constant need to update. So as we go and update and consolidate systems, we're hoping to really see some cost savings as well as get a better product for the department.
Admiral Brown, you're kind of nodding your head in agreement with Catherine as she's talking about that. What's she saying that you agree with the most?
I just oversee a lot of the systems, and I like the idea of quantity discounts. And so as I've looked at the notion of shared systems throughout the department, I'm attracted to this discussion. Again, I mentioned to you that I'm relatively new to my job, but I think the Coast Guard's commitment is to sort of be all in. I think the key is we all have to get to the right baseline and get out of the boutiquing business for each of our individual IT systems, because quite frankly, particularly in this budget environment, they're just not affordable.
And I imagine it's not just IT systems that you're seeing that. It's in just about every kind of operation where, and it really feeds back into the one DHS concept, I
suppose. That's correct.
I wanted to also jump on the fact that the learning management systems, the idea to consolidate them, you have 9 of them. One of the things with the Coast Guard, and Admiral Brown, correct me if I'm wrong, is obviously it's a continuous learning organization. This is something that you see a lot, obviously, from the military side, I imagine the civilian side. Do you guys have the one LMS, learning management system? I mean, how do you guys ensure that people, there's no have and have nots within, even in the Coast Guard?
Well, the Coast Guard has a suite of systems depending upon sort of where you are in the organization and what the specific training need is. We've recently, in the last couple of years, rationalized that system and developed what we call mandated training. Prior to that time, almost anyone could dictate the needs of training for all of our employees, and so they were overburdened with training requirements. So at the enterprise level, we just decided in a given year's time, we're only going to devote 2 weeks to training. What's that 2 weeks going to be? And that's where we came up with the mandated training.
Forces a lot of priority analysis, I imagine.
And as one of the people that provides oversight for that, one of the key business rules is, if you put something in, you have to take something out.
Mm-hmm. That's forced almost by your deadline setting of the 2 weeks. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, my colleague Jason Miller will be continuing joining me in the questions on Federal News Radio 1500 AM for our guests from the Department of Homeland Security, Vice Admiral Manson Brown of the Coast Guard, and Catherine Emerson, the Chief Human Capital Officer at DHS. We'll continue in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
What does big data really mean? It means your agency can gain insight with analytics for large data sets. Go fast with data-intensive workloads and keep everything with secure, boundless data storage. That's what you can do with an agile data infrastructure, but only if it's from NetApp. And delivered by NetApp partners like Worldwide Technology, WWT's fast mobile data center solution offers a powerful, low-cost alternative to traditional data centers. Learn more at netappgov.com.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide.
with hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Today's Human Capital Management Report brought to you by the Graduate School.
The Census Bureau is expanding a program that asks employees to assess their own job skills. The agency will use the information to craft development plans for individuals and put workers in jobs where their skills can be utilized best. Deputy Director Nancy Potok said her agency is also using a job rotation program that trains new employees in multiple departments. The agency sees it as an opportunity to develop future leaders who have a broader view of the Bureau.
How do you meet mission-critical objectives when your resources have been reduced? Enhancing the efficiency of your current workforce may be the answer. For more than 90 years, the federal government has turned to Graduate School USA for its training needs. Why not optimize the talent you already have with quality training from Graduate School USA? For more information, visit graduateschool.edu or call 888-744-GRAD. That's 888-744-GRAD.
Data center consolidation requires fresh thinking. Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. VCE VBlock systems seamlessly integrate leading compute, network, and storage technologies to uniquely support highly virtualized mixed workload environments. This improves your data center utilization and adaptability while dramatically lowering your costs.
VCE VBlock systems are the next evolution of IT. To learn more, visit vce.com/federal. That's vce.com/federal.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight is the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Blood cancer. 1 million Americans live with it every day. Children, teenagers, adults, blood cancer knows no boundaries. This September, celebrate survivors and honor the memory of those lost. Form a team for the Light the Night Walks. Complete an endurance event. Register your child's school for pennies for patients or make a donation today. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Community Spotlight charities are fed by Papa John's.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's a special edition of Agency of the Month. We're focusing on the Department of Homeland Security in our series this month. My colleague Jason Miller sitting in with me, and we're talking to Catherine Emerson, the Chief Human Capital Officer at DHS, and Vice Admiral Manson Brown, Deputy Commandant of the Coast Guard for mission support. And one of the issues, Catherine, that DHS has been dealing with for a long time is the issue of employee morale. You went before Congress not long after taking the job. One of your first jobs was to go there. I imagine that was a little bit daunting. You're new on the job, and all of a sudden you're expected to talk about morale at the agency. What did you have to say to them then, and what have you seen happen, and what have you been responsible for having had happen between now and then?
Well, as you mentioned, it's no secret that DHS has been at the bottom in government surveys in regards to job satisfaction. And in fact, you know, I testified earlier this year regarding DHS's morale and the scoring on the EVS survey and how it was low. One very positive things I found when I took this job is the secretary's vision for a very cohesive strategy to address this issue and the support from leadership. So in terms of being DHS Chico and working on engagement and morale, that makes my job a lot easier when you have leadership at the top who are leading the way on employee engagement. In fact, the secretary has spoken with each and every component head regarding this very matter and is holding them accountable for employee engagement, requiring that they develop action plans and in addressing the issue on how they're going to engage employees throughout their organization. She's also established a very senior level employee engagement executive steering committee that's represented by all the components. And in that committee, which I am chairing, we talk about things such as communication, communication strategies across DHS so all of our employees are getting the same message. How do we go about that? And one of the nice things about having all the components represented is that they're all hearing the same message, but also we're sharing best practices. How best do we communicate with our employees? How best do we listen to our employees? Also talk about the EVS survey and where changes need to be made, where our employees are requesting that we take a look at, for example, employee recognition awards program. And in fact, as a result of the last survey in 2011, the secretary is putting together a secretary's honors, a secretary award program where we will recognize our employees. We also have a leadership development program, which is underway, where we're looking at leadership at all different levels for all employees in DHS, whether you're a new employee just starting out in self-leading or thinking about perhaps one day being involved in management or supervision, all the way up to our executives and executives who may have been leading for a long time.
When you analyze the input that you get from employees, the kind that you just talked about, what are the themes? What are the trends that you see in the feedback that you get? Are there enough of those that you can narrow it down to maybe a certain amount of buckets and be able to address what's in each of those buckets?
Yeah. One thing for sure, our employees are very dedicated to the mission of the agency. They truly have a passion for working at DHS. So with that, you can't go wrong. But we also learned that they want increased opportunities for creativity, for innovation, for empowerment. So as we look at the EVS survey results, and we're scheduled to get them back, should be in the next couple weeks from OPM for the 2012, look at the areas in terms of employee recognition, leadership, and really share those results with the employees, put together a working group, share them with leadership, also with their union partners, and really listen to see what everyone wants to do going forward to improve morale in the agency.
Now, Admiral Brown, you've been having some success in this area. The Coast Guard has recently seen some nice milestones. Talk about what you're seeing in that respect.
Well, in terms of the viewpoint survey, we actually hit it out of the park. We had 60.3% response from our civilian employees, which, quite frankly, in terms of survey results, is pretty record-breaking. That really means that our employees are engaged and involved. Now, a big part of that response was that we conveyed to them how important their feedback was, not only to the secretary and the department, but to leaders throughout the Coast Guard.
Based on the response you got and based on the comments you received, are you taking some specific steps, maybe outside of what maybe the DHS as a whole is taking with the steering committee and some of the employee engagement groups? Are you guys doing anything that's very Coast Guard-centric?
Well, I can only talk in general terms because I think we're still waiting for the specific results of the survey.
For 2012?
Yes.
But was there anything from 2011 that kind of spurred you guys in a specific direction?
Well, again, I would just tell you what we typically do is we break it down into executable segments, and we engage our workforce. We either create focus groups or create dedicated teams to step us through the improvement process.
Catherine, we talked a little bit during the break about leadership and the challenges that agencies are having with trying to navigate leadership development. And that is the concept that somebody who may be the best leader for a particular area may not be the person with the most technical expertise, although not just in government, but private sector too. That's normally how promotions happen and how people make their way into leadership. What are you seeing as far as an ability to navigate that and to develop, cultivate an environment where people see themselves able to find a leadership track? Because I bet that is probably a big component to keeping people engaged when they see a career path for themselves.
You're correct. That is a big component. In fact, at DHS, we have the Leadership Development Initiative that is sponsored by the secretary and the deputy secretary. And what that involves is looking at leadership at five different levels, beginning with the new employee who is thinking, well, one day I'd like to go into management, and seeing if it's really right for them. We give them training. We give them opportunities. Right now we're focusing on an aspect of leader development called Cornerstone, where we are working with those frontline managers, supervisors, those that have that day-to-day interaction with the employee, where, you know, that's really that time where some leadership skills are established. And then also at our capstone program, where we're looking at the executives and constantly upgrading training in the area of leadership and learning from best practices. For example, the Admiral mentioned the Coast Guard and their leadership, and we rely on them as well.
Are you able to apply, Admiral, some of the concepts of in the military structure to the civilian structure and then share that with the other components in DHS?
We are indeed. As one of the five military services, in many ways, the way I like to say it is we're an engine of leadership for America. Back when I was in personnel, I would get calls every year as we're sending people home about who's leaving. I'd like to hire these people just because of our track record of creating leaders. And because of that, as Catherine has alluded to, I think we're sort of looked at as a model or a best practice for the department, and we're more than happy to share our expertise with the department to build leaders throughout the enterprise.
Catherine, last week when Undersecretary Boris was on, he did talk about the capstone and the other one.
Cornerstone,
thank you. And it was another stone, just was lost me there for a sec. Give us a sense of where those programs are. I mean, are they just in the very beginning stages, or have you gone through a series of maybe training sessions around those?
Cornerstone is well underway for the new supervisors. We have worked with the components and identified training elements that need to be given to those first-line supervisors, so that's well underway. Capstone, we just wrapped up a pilot that started in the summer, and we're evaluating that before we go forward, but we're looking at things such as meta leadership, leadership in emergency situations. We're relying on experts in the field, experts throughout DHS, what components are doing that's working, and getting feedback from our employees. What did they find useful to becoming a great leader?
We have a lot more questions here, and we have no more time to ask them. I'm grateful for both of you being here today. Thank you very much for coming in today. Vice Admiral Manson Brown, the Deputy Commandant for Mission Support at the United States Coast Guard. Catherine Emerson, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Homeland Security Department. Thank you to my colleague Jason Miller for joining me on the questioning today. You're listening to a special edition of Agency of the Month, the focus on the Homeland Security Department this month, and Agency of the Month series brought to you by CenturyLink. You can find all of our conversations at federalnewsradio.com. Search term Agency of the Month. Next week, it's focus again on Homeland Security in the 3 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is coming next. Thanks for listening.